You are listening to the Council of Deans of Health podcast. Welcome to this Council of Deans of Health podcast on being an equity accomplice as part of Race Equity Month 2022. My name is Nadia and I am Programmes and Events Manager here at the Council. And I'm delighted to be joined by two colleagues from Sheffield Hallam University. With us we have Dr. Claire Walsh, who is Head of Academic Development and Inclusivity, and Ifra Saleh, who is a Senior Lecturer in Academic Development and Diversity, but is also one of the Council of Deans of Health Fellows. So welcome to you both, and thank you for joining us today. I think probably the best place to start for this discussion is explain to listeners what the Equity Accomplice Programme is, and kind of what the impetus was for Sheffield Hallam to set this up in the first instance.
So the Hallam Values were launched in 2021, and the Hallam Values were created to recognise that we want our institution to be a place where we build inclusive communities and where we can also contribute to being a fairer society. Our student body is made up of more than 70% of students who identify from coming from one of the underrepresented student groups within the university. So it's essential that we work hard to ensure that everyone feels that they belong at the university. And we do recognise that students who are from a racially minoritised community can often experience discrimination, made to feel othered, and that can happen both on and off campus. And therefore, we wanted to create a staff development offer to develop awareness around race equity.
I think as well, Ifra, you know, in universities across the sector, there is an ethnic penalty that relates to the difference in awarding 2-1s and firsts to students. And when you try and remove all of the potential causes from that, what remains is this ethnic penalty that kind of sits there uncomfortably. So when we think about our students in health and social care courses, and we know, and you know, we really celebrate the diversity of those students when they come and join us at university, the thought that we are kind of creating or perpetuating those barriers when we're wanting to enable a really powerful, strong, authentic future health and social care workforce, you know, that really kind of grounds us in understanding why this type of work's really important. And I think the other bit, I don't know about you, Ifra, is also starting with ourselves. So we have to acknowledge there's loads of people that fab people we work with that helped us with this project. One colleague, Dr. Lindy Ann Blaise Alfred, kind of kicked this off at Hallam. And we were both fortunate enough to work with her before she moved on to Pastors New. And what we were finding is, Nadia, is the same faces would come to our events or talks or presentations. And those people would share their experiences and start to grow their confidence in being able to talk about race a little bit more fluently. And that's fine, that's great, but only seeing those same people every time is not going to change your organization or have an influence on your students, or, you know, reach out into the places that we have those partnerships and in this situation, in this context within health and social care. So we as a central team in the university, we kind of have a responsibility to look after and support academic practice and how that extends as an applied university into the workplaces like the NHS. Because we recognise that those disadvantages will play out. So if we can give our staff the confidence to start to use and think about their own racial literacy and cultural competence, then they should in turn start to help those students to feel more confident, like they belong, like they're being included. And I don't know, when we started, it was, I found it quite hard. I'm a white, I should say on a podcast, it's a bit difficult. So I'm a cis heterosexual white woman, middle-aged woman. And so as a white woman delivering racial literacy, I would say I had loads of fragility, really scared, really like challenged by doing this initially. I didn't know what to say, so would often say the wrong thing, or wouldn't say anything because I would be scared not to say, you know, to get called out. And so I think one of the things we wanted to make sure of was that whenever people joined us to do this work, it was about them being in a safe space. You agree, your friend?
Yeah, it's definitely about creating those spaces where we can open up those conversations. And as Claire says, we sit in a University Central team, and it is quite a small team, considering how much outreach we have. So there's four of us that deliver equity come place, three individuals who were racialized as white, and then myself, who's Arab. And what we need to recognize is that the onus isn't on the person of color to start those conversations, because it does become very tiring, and we do suffer with racial battle fatigue as well. But what I would say is, once again, thinking about allyship, if you are considering developing something similar in your own institution, that we need to involve those people who racialize as white. Now, I'm a person of color, but I'm not an expert about race or racism. I've got my own single story, my own experiences that I've encountered, my family and my children, and my own experiences coming to academia as a member of staff, but also as a student. And we've all had to go on our own individual race equity journeys, really, haven't we? And supported each other as a team and given ourselves spaces to talk and debrief with one another, because these are difficult conversations, and you often will find yourself in front of a group of staff where it is challenging. And you have to have those difficult conversations with them.
I think it's been a bit like a supervisory process often, hasn't it? Where we've kind of pre-planned what we're going to do and then do a debrief afterwards, where we've felt that we've had challenging or difficult conversations, or where we've got a bit stuck ourselves. And we're really open to saying, you know, look, we're making a personal commitment to doing this. We know it's vital to enable our students to thrive. But we don't do it without our own personal, you know, we bought into it, we believe in it, and so that commitment doesn't come without some emotional labor. And I think it's when, you know, you think about staff who were on a very, you know, we can all be on very different points of that journey as to understanding race and the impact of racism, particularly as a white person. You know, it can be difficult.
I think that's a really good point. And I think for anybody, and includes allies, it includes people of colour, we'll all have that different experience, as you say. I just wondered if you could give a bit of a quick summary as to what the programme involves and what your staff expect and can gain from the programme.
Yeah, so as Claire initially said, Equity Accomplices Initiative, where we develop staff members or student-facing staff members' racial literacy, and supporting them with creating spaces for discussion and reflection in becoming anti-racist practitioners, really. So we want to move away from people being non-racist to be an anti-racist. And I think that's where we developed the name Equity Accomplice. You know, it's going one step further than being an ally, really. And we want to develop staff members who are willing to take the next step and the right step as well when we think about social justice. So it's not just a case of, well, I'm only going to participate in this work because it's something that affects me or I've got a target to me. It is, as you've already said, it is a journey, it is a personal journey. And when we start introducing Equity Accomplice and facilitating the first session, we always say to those participants that it's not a destination. So don't think that you're going to complete these series of six workshops and you're going to be an expert. You really have to put that time in. And we do create lots of spaces for people to talk about things that concern them. And it might be things around language and terminology. It might be talking about previous experiences. It might be giving us examples of, you know, if this was to happen, what would you recommend, or what tools could you give me? So, and it's getting them to work as a team and think about how they are going to approach this as a team or a department, but also as an individual journey as well.
Thanks, Ifra. And you talk about it for being targeted to those people who are willing participants and willing to take the next step. Have you had any thoughts around how to engage people who are less willing to engage with the programme, or is that something you're not aiming for at the moment?
So we've had, I would say we've had a mixture of both. I think there's a couple of things here, isn't there? We're engaging people's hearts and minds. And whilst, you know, you might view yourself as being non-racist, so really understanding what being anti-racist is something different. And I would say a lot of the barriers to, you know, someone thinking, oh, we could write something like this, or we could deliver something like this, is around that. It's kind of described as white fragility, but that kind of anxiousness that you might have because you think, oh, no, I'm going to say the wrong thing, or I'm going to upset someone, or I'm, you know, I'm going to, it's going to be a disaster, and I can't put myself there because I'm not the expert. But one of the things I think we quickly try and encourage in participants is that if you're not feeling that, then you're probably not engaging with the work. And you just have to decide you're going to put yourself in a place of vulnerability. And once you accept that you're going to feel vulnerable, the next thing is to accept that you're going to get it wrong. And then once you accept that you're going to get it wrong, and then someone actually points out to you that you've said something, you know, so rather than calling people out, we kind of call them in to say, oh, that's an interesting phrase. This phrase is probably more useful in this context, or, you know, I can see that this is difficult for you. This might be because those advantages have never meant you've not had to think about this before. So we try and encourage that reflection in the moment. And the university is, you know, supportive in and the departments in the health courses see the value of doing that. So they had, and IFRA was involved in this research, they'd previously done some research of student experiences on placement. And so the kind of the drive for us to do this, you know, that it was very imperative really as an output of that research, was their lived experience was on experiencing discrimination and racism on placement. So we couldn't ignore that. So in those departments, in health and social care departments, they have been, you know, they've looked at their recruitment practices, their interviewing and application processes, and we've worked with the recruitment teams and run this program with them. And then we work very closely with placement provider links and the kind of academic staff that support students on placement to do that work. So they, I would say that once that compelling story of that lived experience is there with you, you can't, once you know it, you can't unknow it. As a person of colour, you live it, but as a white person, I can only hear it and take it on board. But once I've heard it and took it on board, I can't unhear it. I can't go back. So the only thing I can do with that is take that forward. And I think, you know, credit to Hallam in terms of those departments that have taken that step to kind of do that work. But it's not been, you know, without its challenges, has it, Ifra?
No, it has been difficult. And as Claire mentioned earlier, you have to build in some supervision. And I would definitely say if anyone's thinking of developing a similar programme, to think about how you're supporting fellow facilitators, but also other people in the room who were people of colour. And you know, they potentially come in, because the way we deliver it at the moment is we do it with departments or with teams, so people generally work with each other and know each other, and we can see sometimes some of these difficult conversations. So we would generally pick up with the person of color via email or pick up a phone and just touch base with them afterwards, just to make sure that they're okay. Do they need any additional support? Direct them to any staff networks that we've got, potentially HROD, and just making sure that those people in the room are supported as well. And also getting the white staff members that are in the room to think, maybe, you know, why is that racially minoritized individual not coming to these workshops? And we have had that, haven't we, where, you know, some have said, I'm not coming, I don't want to partake in it. And that's absolutely fine. And we understand why that occurs. But also, if they are in the room, why are they quiet? And why are they not contributing? And getting the other staff members to really think about that, that experience for them as well. So it's coming at it from different angles. You know, we've got this brief that we want to achieve. We know that we want to improve how students feel at our institution and belonging, as Claire said, the degree awarding gap. But it's also making it a culture where people want to work and people want to thrive as well.
The worst bit that they think is the thing that the barrier is the first time you get it wrong. Yeah. So the first time someone says what you just said is, I find offensive, or, you know, that you've really not thought about my lived experience, and that can be across all the protected characteristics. And the dread, I would say, that when that first happened to me, and it's happened to me since, you know, with colleagues of colour, but also colleagues from the LGBTQIA plus community, and you know, just being able to go, thanks, really glad you told me, and I'll, you know, I can take that and move forward. And then not make any more of it. Don't need to dwell on it. Don't need to kind of give a 3-page apology or anything. And I think a lot of people, that's the bit of a pivotal moment where people go, okay, I survived that. My fragility, you know, I'm still intact. I'm feeling a little bit wobbly by it, but I survived it. And I think that's very helpful, you know, when you've had that experience, because, you know, people are, they're senior clinicians, they're experts, and all of a sudden we're asking them to think about things that perhaps they've never had to consider in their lives. They've never had any formal education about racial literacy in their primary or secondary schooling. And as health professionals, we might think about, oh, we know about health inequalities and how that plays out in terms of healthcare outcomes. But I think turning that inward to the professions to think, actually, what is that experience for staff and students, you know, who work in our organisations is different.
And I think it's probably more important that we get it wrong and try than not try at all. I think we all have to be more forgiving and understanding when people get it wrong. And then I just wanted to have a think about, at the beginning, Ifra, you said that you've got a very diverse student and staff body at Sheffield Hallam. I'm thinking particularly for universities who don't have the level of diversity that Sheffield Hallam does, and who maybe don't have the resources, or, you know, you start this piece of work has began with the research around racial inequalities, and I wonder, without that impetus, what advice could you offer to other universities who might want to be doing something similar, or individuals, I guess, because I think a lot of this work, particularly around equality and inclusion, tends to be led by a few individuals that have to then try and bring along other colleagues and wider support. It sounds like that's not necessarily been the case at Sheffield Hallam, and that's absolutely great that you've had high-level senior support with your with Hallam's values. But what advice could you offer other colleagues who maybe don't have that same level of support more widely across the board?
Yeah, I would say definitely find out what the institution's already doing. I know when I was in the nursing department as a nursing academic, I knew what was happening in the department, but I didn't really have an understanding of what was happening across the institution. And now being in this team, I can see the fantastic work that's happening in other departments as well. So maybe collaborating with other departments, scoping what other projects are happening, involving your student union as well, because they've got a good oversight of different work that's happening across the institution. And I would say, you know, whether your university is diverse or not, as Claire said, once you've heard those experiences, and there's a lot of literature out there, so you don't have to do the research yourselves. There's lots out there about those students' experiences, and we don't have to keep reliving that trauma with them by continuously asking them what that experience was. Once you've heard it and you can't unhear it, whether you've got a diverse student body of 70-odd% like we've got here at Sheffield Hallam, or where you've got a student body of racial minoritized students, say for example, who might only be 10% of that student body, it's only, for example, affecting one student, it's work that needs to be done. We know that when we think about other protected characteristics, I feel that we are making lots of headway with those communities. But when it comes to race and racial literacy, we are, you know, years and years behind. And when we talk about racism within the NHS or within the healthcare sector, we're talking about it like it's something that's new, that's only happened since, you know, George Floyd's murder 2 years ago, when actually we think back 70 years to the Windrush generation, it's been happening for a long time. So it's nothing new, it's just the traction has taken a lot longer to get there. Mm. And what I would say is develop working groups with other like-minded individuals, and they may not have to come from the same department as you. Network with other departments as well. And you may not have the capacity to deliver something such as equity come place, but you can start having those conversations and creating a space for staff members to talk about racial literacy and how it makes them feel and what they're scared of. Because I think that's one of the biggest conversations we have at Equity Come Place is, you know, when we ask them what are the barriers, everybody pretty much says saying the wrong thing or having a space for us to talk and learn. So yeah, I say get like-minded people involved.
Yeah, build some social networks wherever you are, and start simple. So, you know, some of the materials we use are from open access sources. So BBC Bite Size, really good pieces there, just unpacking privilege and advantage, understanding what racism might mean. There are lots of kind of simple resources that you can get. Like IFRA says, lots of research out there you can draw on that you could then have a reflective session together to unpack. At an institution level, there will be drivers for universities. The disparities in degree awarding gaps are impactful. They're measured by the Office for Students. Every university has an access and participation plan. So there is some strategy in your institution that will be drawing on that. I guess the challenge is sometimes we kind of sit quite comfortably with the data, and that's the easier place to be rather than getting to actually what culturally do we need to change and shift here that will make the difference. And Equity Compass is just one part of that jigsaw. So look at your institution, think of the places where you can lobby, think of the places where you can get some leverage and build those coalitions. IFRA has also helped to set up groups for minoritized students, and IFRA spent, you know, many hours in rooms on her own waiting for other people to join her. So give yourself permission and time to, you know, you're in this for the long haul. You're kind of, this isn't something that will simply happen and change overnight.
Thank you, Ruth. That's really helpful advice. I wondered for you, how is the feedback at the moment from people who've been on the programme, and where do you envisage the next steps to go?
It's been quite a large spectrum, I'd say, in terms of feedback. And some staff members have said it's been life-changing for them, and it's made them very emotional throughout the sessions. But we've also had staff members that have come to some of the conferences that we've held and talked about their journey through Equity Come Place and how they're making changes now in their department. And I think that's where you see those journeys really flourishing, when you start seeing those staff members doing targeted work with externals, with students, with other people within the team. But we also have to be realistic and realize that if you do have a group of, say, 20, 25 people within a group or a cohort, that we're not always going to develop everyone in the room. There's people that are going to come and listen, maybe take part, but then come away and not actually do anything with it. So I think we do need to be realistic in terms of our target audience and the outcomes of that. But generally, the feedback that we've received is very positive. And we've had several iterations, I would call them, of Equity Accomplices. Claire's mentioned one of our colleagues, ex-colleagues, Lindy Ann Blaise Alfred, developed quite a lot of the content. And then since then, we've gone through different iterations, and that's based from staff feedback, but also our feedback as facilitators as well, and recognizing what's happening in the room and how those conversations are developing, and realizing that actually we want to have more space for discussions and more space for interaction rather than slides after slides, for example. And initially, when we developed it, it was all hosted online because we were in the middle of a pandemic. And we've realized now that the sessions where we've hosted them more recently face to face have been fantastic. We've had more conversations. People have been, I feel, a lot more open about their feelings and having those conversations. And I think that when you're on a Zoom or online, you kind of can hide a little bit behind your screen, and we don't always get that engagement that we would have liked. So I would definitely say, I know having hybrid approaches or online are very practical, but if you're going to facilitate something like this, I do believe face-to-face is definitely the way to go.
Do you think the other bits, I'm just chuckling a bit here. So sometimes we'll have people that'll not participate at all. And we constantly weigh up this kind of, so we talk about having a principled space. We want to create a space where people feel that we want to listen to, understand, you know, have that compassionate approach, supporting each other. Be happy and welcome if someone calls you in to say, oh, what about what you've just said? And for some people, even though we state all of that and model that, and we're very careful to do that as facilitators, they'll still be absolutely petrified potentially through it, or they'll be dismissive. And that's a kind of a defense mechanism. And we often wriggle as to whether we should be kind of leaning into that a little bit more and pushing them a little bit to kind of show them in a safe and supportive way that actually thinking a little bit more deeply about this might help you in terms of some of the concepts that you've possibly grown up with and been socialized into. And we still struggle with that now, as to whether how to get that right and where that balance is. And sometimes we come out and I think I possibly do this more than anyone. I think, oh God, that didn't go well, did it? Because the room was just bristly and difficult, and you know, someone else or Ifra will say, no, that went really well, there was just quite a bit of white fragility in the room. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you know, the feedback, just because it isn't all positive doesn't necessarily mean that it's not impactful or successful, because we you know yourself, Nadia, sometimes you'll do something and it's only like a couple of days later that you'll go, aha, I see, or the penny drops later. So yeah, we do have kind of mixed kind of responses to the work. And when it's like that, we just hold on to the fact that it's the right thing to be doing.
Yeah, those tough conversations are important. And I think you're hoping that those discussions that you have at that time, whilst not having impact overnight, will then lead to doing something else and making a real difference in the long run. So what's next for you at Sheffield Hallam? Where do you plan to see this going in the future?
Well, Ifra, we've always wanted to kind of develop the developer programme, haven't we? Because we've had quite a few of our staff through this. And I think the next tentative steps for them is to give them the confidence to roll this out themselves. So that's something that we've got on the horizon. And then also, anyone that's listening to this, you know, this podcast, if you're interested in this work and want to talk more about it, and we would be more than happy to talk and share what we've learned, and you know, share some of our work to kind of support you in your institution.
That's a very, very generous offer. Thank you. And thank you both for talking to us today and sharing about your journeys through developing the Equity Accomplice Programme and also the wider journey at Sheffield Hallam. So thank you. And thank you to all the listeners. This podcast is part of Race Equity Month. As Claire and Ifra have said, they're happy to help if you have something that you would be considering developing at your own institution. So we'll provide contact details for that if you are interested. Please do follow all the latest on Race Equity Month using the hashtag on Twitter, and there'll be plenty going on throughout November. And once again, huge thank you to Claire and Ifra, and we do hope to see some more exciting initiatives going on all across the UK. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Council of Deans of Health podcast. For more information, please visit councilofdeans.org.uk.